My interest in softball only lasted a week. I would live in that big house with him whether he's awful or not, Meg said. Beth joined us finally and leaned against the window, her other shoulder touching my own. They do have a beautiful piano, she said, with longing dripping from every word. Lori's fingers moved so roughly over the keys that I swore I could almost hear the music from inside our kitchen. When I'm a successful writer, I'll buy you the best piano ever created, I promised my sister, and I meant it. Most writers can't even pay their bills, let alone buy a piano, Beth. So let's say, when I marry a rich man, you can come over and play mine, Amy said. Ugh, she sounded like Meg, always talking about getting married. But at least we knew Meg was actually old enough to be married. Amy danced around the kitchen and stuck her hand into the bowl of chips, pulling out a handful of cheesy, dusted fried potatoes cut into triangles. They were her favorite. Her orange fingers always grossed me out. And what if the man you love is poor, but a good man, like Dad? Beth asked Amy. Beth stuck a pot of coffee into the Keurig for Meg and pulled the handle down. Lori's head began to bob along with the movement of his fingers. It was fascinating to watch. He was the opposite of Beth when she played, her calm fingers gliding over the keys, smooth as butter, and her eyes closed in the tranquil melody. Lori's fingers were violent to his keys, combatively smashing over the ivories, and his eyes were wide open as he played. My heart was beating from inside my chest to the backs of my ears as I watched him. I could barely hear what my sisters were saying.
Well, Amy said, it's not like being stuck with a big nose or something. I have a choice of who I love.
People aren't stuck with big noses anymore anyway. You can get that fixed easier than you can get a boyfriend, Meg replied. My eyes were still on Lori as he played. I had never seen anyone so oblivious of their surroundings as he was then. We were staring at him. Well, at least I was. And he didn't notice at all. He was too involved in whatever he was playing.
What about you, Joe? Would you marry a poor man if he was nice? Amy asked, her little body moving around the kitchen still. She had a can of orange soda in one hand and orange chips in the other.
I didn't look away from the window.
I wouldn't marry anyone for money. I don't want anyone to have that type of control over me. And besides, I'm going to make enough money on my own. Amy snorted. Sure, Joe.
I couldn't even gather enough anger toward her. I was too fascinated by the boy framed in the window.
And what about you, Amy? I said coldly. You think you're going to have a rich husband? I hate to break it to you, but...
Joe, Beth's voice broke off my sentence.
Stop talking about boys anyway, Amy. You're too young, Meg said.
I didn't mention that by seventh grade, Meg had already kissed a handful of boys. Amy took a swig of her orange soda, and it left a line of orange above her lip like a mustache. She quickly licked it away.
We'll all grow up someday, Meg. We might as well know what we want.
Lori wiped his forehead with the back of his hand, and his blonde hair moved, touching the tips of his shoulders. I tried to imagine what my husband would be like, but as usual, I couldn't picture him.
I didn't even know if I wanted a husband. They seemed like a lot of work. And I'd never met a boy who I could even consider letting take me to dinner, let alone marry.
I stared at Lori, and his fingers stopped cold. I ducked down just as he looked toward our window, and Beth laughed when I popped my head back up. He was still sitting there, but the book was back in his hands, and he had stopped playing music.
What have you been working on lately, Joe? Beth asked, to change the subject from matrimony and riches.
A lot of things, I wanted to say. I was only a few paragraphs short of finishing my longest piece, an essay on female sex trafficking in Cambodia. I'd spent more time on this piece than anything I had written before. I knew that Mr. Geckel would never allow me to publish it in the school newspaper, so I was planning on sending it to Vice myself. It was a long shot, and they would probably never even read it, let alone publish it. But sending it in was something I had to do for myself. Once I did that, I would be ready for anything. Mr. Geckel could only control my voice within the walls of White Rock High.
Nothing special, I started, even though I was lying through my teeth. It was special. It was the most special thing I had ever written. I felt it deep in the whites of my bones.
I read your paper about sex slavery, the one on your laptop, Amy began.
I whirled around and grabbed her arm. The soda can dropped onto the floor and fizzy orange liquid sprayed onto the tile.
You what?
I shouted at her. She pulled back from me, but I held her arm.
It was open on your laptop, she yelled in her defense.
I don't care. I let go of her when I felt Beth's eyes burning on me. It wasn't that I didn't want anyone to read it. I was mad because I thought my laptop was the one place where I had privacy from my three sisters, and Amy had just ripped that away from me. Meredith came barreling into the kitchen, and I stepped back away from the orange puddle on the floor. What the hell is going on in here? Meredith stepped around the mess and let out a deep breath before anyone answered her.
Nothing, Meredith. Everything is fine, Beth said, and grabbed a towel hanging on the oven door.
She laid it down, and both Amy and I stopped glaring at each other as Beth cleaned up our mess.
Who was fighting? I heard yelling.
Meredith's voice was steady, and she wasn't in the mood for our games.
No one. Beth bent down. We were just messing around. Don't worry, we're cooking and getting everything ready for tonight. I'm almost finished with my cheese ball.
Meredith looked at the four of us and shook her head. I figured that she didn't believe Beth, but didn't feel like fighting on New Year's Eve. Meredith had a glass of clear liquid in her hand, and I thought she should have another. She had never before looked as tense and tired as she did lately. She told us to be careful and not make any more messes and left us in the kitchen. I gave Amy a look and turned back to the window.
Lori was gone.
I went to my room and closed the door and wrote to forget how mad I was at my sister.
7. Meg. My makeup was done and I had just finished blow-drying my hair. While I was waiting for Joe to get out of the shower and curl my hair, I picked up the book she had slid under my pillow on Christmas. Honestly, I hadn't opened it since then, but I had a few minutes, so I lifted the black cover and turned to a random page. It began, "My favorite thing about you is your smell." I read the words in silent awe, and then read them again, and Shia's hands, dirt under his fingernails, came to my mind. He was always dirty, always planting something or helping some old woman or other move her furniture around or some such. He always smelled like the earth, like a garden. I couldn't believe he was back, and worse, I couldn't believe that I was thinking about him right now. John would be home in a week to see me. I should be thinking about John's clean, strong hands and the way he always smelled like fresh cologne and laundry detergent. He wouldn't dare to wear ratty t-shirts or dirty sneakers the way Shia did. Joe! I yelled. It was 8:30, and everyone was going to start arriving at our house around 10. By everyone, I mean a few of the neighbors and their kids. I didn't invite any of my friends, since half of them weren't talking to me over a rumor that wasn't even true. That's what happens when you're labeled the school slut in a small army town. It follows you past graduation. I didn't mind so much and still don't, really. If they were truly my friends, they would know that I wouldn't do what they are accusing me of doing. The same thing happened to me at Fort Hood, and it was so much worse. The rumor mill here seemed like child's play. That night, we would have followed our tradition of celebrating at home, but Joe and I got a last-minute invite to the King's house for Belle Gardner's engagement party. So we decided to stop by there for an hour and then make sure we were back home by 11. I didn't want to go, especially because I was afraid to see Shia there, but I had assumed since the party was at the King's huge estate, many people would be there and lessen my chance of running into Shia. Josephine! I shouted again. While I waited for her, I flipped to another page in the book she'd gifted me. The poem there was simple and began, How can our love die? Stunned, I turned a few more pages. He isn't coming back. Underneath the poem was the word wilted, as if the poem was signed by Wilted. I thought of the bouquet of flowers on Mrs. King's nightstand. The card was signed by Shia, and the red petals were wilted. I touched the corner of one, and it broke off, falling onto the wooden dresser. I thought about how he left so suddenly, and how much time I'd wasted wishing that he would come back. Trying to push those wilted flowers and his shining green eyes out of my head, I slammed the book shut and tossed it onto my bed just as Joe came strolling into our room. "I'm here," she said with a smile. Her hands were full. In one hand she held the curling iron and her phone, and in the other she had a handful of bugles. Her long hair was down, touching the top of her hips as she moved toward me and stood behind me at the vanity. Her face was freshly scrubbed pink, and her pale skin was glowing. She would never listen to me when I told her how lucky she was to have such flawless skin. Beth and I suffered from acne the most, but mine had cleared up since I started working at Sephora, where I got to try all the new skincare products from the best, most expensive brands for free. "Your makeup looks so good," Joe said. She plugged in the curling iron, and I parted my hair, clipping up the top of it so she could curl the bottom. I stared into the mirror and smiled at my sister. We had been getting closer lately, and I was starting to see a change in her. She was no longer my little Josephine who ran away from home when old Mr. Lawrence trapped a raccoon in a cage and wouldn't let it go. She was growing up so fast, and that meant I was too. I was ready to be older. I hated being on the cusp of being a woman because I felt like one but wasn't treated like one. "Big curls, please." Joe nodded and went to work. "Do you think Amy will be able to stay up tonight?" I asked as she curled a chunk of my hair. The strands were hot when she let them out of the barrel and they fell onto my shoulder. Just as she started to answer, Amy bounced into our bedroom.
"Joe, Meg, whatever you do, you have to tell me how the party is."
"We will. Are you trying to stay up, or will you be asleep when we get back?" I asked as Joe wrapped another piece of my hair around the metal barrel. Amy shook her head and moved around us. She grabbed a tube of lipstick from my vanity and leaned down into the mirror as her small fingers pulled the top off, revealing a deep purple shade.
"I'll be up."
Amy's fingers turned the tube around and around, as if she was trying to figure out how to use it.
"You guys will have all the fun. Did you hear that Belle Gardner is engaged? I can't wait to see her ring. Ugh, you're gonna have way more fun than me."
Amy sighed heavily and licked her lips before she smeared the stick across her lips. When she was done, she pulled back and looked at herself in the mirror.
"It's going to be a blast. And of course, we know, Amy, we were invited."
Joe rolled her eyes. Amy pouted.
"Stop rubbing it in."
I didn't particularly care about Belle Gardner's engagement, or her at all. She was 1 year older than me and had supposedly been going to move to Florida for college, but she only made it as far as the French Quarter. Rumor had it that she worked at a bar downtown, right in the center of the quarter, somewhere between Bourbon and Royal. Of course, she was a bartender, like my Aunt Hannah.
"How big do you think her ring is?" Amy asked,
her little sock-covered feet moving around my small bedroom. Joe and I made eye contact in the mirror.
"Who is she even engaged to?" Joe asked.
I shrugged my shoulders and closed my eyes. Who knew? Not me, nor did I care. I felt bad for the poor man who asked her to marry him. I could have made up excuse after excuse on why I didn't like her, but the main reason was Shia. They had dated briefly during the end of my junior year, their senior, and those 2 weeks felt like the longest of my life.
"Who knows? Probably some soldier," Joe said, looking at Amy through the mirror.
Amy's eyes lit up.
Can you imagine? Everyone is lucky but me.
She sighed. Lucky? To be engaged at 20? I responded to Amy. Even though I had a catty response, I had grown up wishing I would find the love of my life at a young age and have the security of being someone's wife. I knew I was jealous of Belle Gardner, and though I would never say it to my sisters, I was secretly hoping John would propose to me when he came home for leave the following week. Beth's voice came from over by the door, where she was leaning against its frame. I'm glad I don't have to go and be with all those frightening people and try to think of things to say. She hated to be around crowds. I felt a slight guilt when I got the Facebook invite for only Joe and me, but Beth would much rather be home with Meredith and Amy than at a crowded party with me and Joe. I gave Beth a sympathetic smile and looked back at Joe. Is that what you're wearing tonight? I asked her. She nodded and looked down at her all-black outfit. Black jeans, black shirt. A thin line of pale skin showed just above her hip. I couldn't remember the last time I'd seen Joe in a dress. Probably that one Easter where Meredith made all of us wear matching dresses and carry matching baskets to get family pictures done. Gah, they were horrendous. They were probably on some BuzzFeed list of corniest family photos.
What's that smell?
Amy asked and sniffed the air. It smelled like burnt. Oh my God, Joe! I yanked my head away from her, and a chunk of my hair was smoking still on the barrel of the iron. Amy screamed louder than I did, and Joe dropped the hot curling iron onto the floor.
Get it off the floor, Beth yelled. It's going to burn the carpet.
I stared at my hair and ran my fingers over the hole in it. Joe began, I'm sorry, I can't go anywhere like this. My eyes welled up with tears, and as much as I didn't want to yell at Joe, I was always going to be that girl who cared about what her hair looked like.
I ruin everything, Joe mumbled, barely loud enough for anyone to hear her.
Her words made such a sad sound that I wanted to comfort her, but I just kept staring at the chunk of my hair she'd burned off, and I didn't know what to say. Amy clucked around me and pulled the bow from her white hair.
Here, put this on, you'll barely notice.
I took the bow from her hands and put it in my hair. I never wore bows, I was too old for them, but there was something edgy, a little baby doll-like, about the way the black bow wrapped through the front of my hair. I looked at myself in the mirror and straightened my back. I couldn't let my burnt hair ruin my night. I still looked sexy. I liked the contrast between my dark makeup and my girlish bow.
You're so pretty, Meg. I hope I am as pretty as you when I get older, Amy said.
That made me smile. Leave it to little Amy to give me the extra confidence boost I needed. Belle Gardner would look flawless, I knew she would. She always did, and her fiancé was probably some rich southern gentleman, and she was going to spend her party showing off some beautiful diamond, and I was going to spend the party sulking and reminding myself that I had someone too. John would be home soon. John would be home soon. John will be home soon, Joe said, stealing the words from inside my head. I smiled at her effort and pushed my feet into my heels. 8. The driveway to the King's house was packed with black cars and people in their New Year's best. My feet were already killing me, and every time I looked down at Joe's sneaker-covered feet, I wished I didn't care so much about what people thought of my appearance. If I was like Joe, I would have worn flats and jeans. We passed an SUV, and I looked at myself, using the window as a mirror. My sparkly dress was tight, and my hair was already falling out of its curls. I looked at myself again, trying to be more like Joe. I looked hot, I knew that I did. I just had to remind myself a few more times. God, it's so crowded, Joe said, waiting for me to catch up to her.
The king's estate was a massive, two-story, square, tan house with thick white pillars on the porch extending up to the second floor. The long shutters on the bottom floor windows were painted black, and since I had last been here a week prior, someone had strung up strands of white twinkling lights on the black fence upstairs and down the front pillars. The house was always beautiful. It had been my dream home since before I even stepped inside. But that night, it seemed even more magical. Flowers were everywhere. Purple bell flowers draped over iron trellises, and blue flowers that I didn't know the name of overflowed from hanging baskets. The real estate in southern Louisiana was my favorite of what I had ever seen. I loved the old square houses with shutters and pillars, and the eeriness of it all just made it even more appealing to me. When we finally stepped onto the porch, my heart was beating so fast and my toes were aching in my heels. I spotted Mr. Blackley, the doorman for the estate, and he smiled, waving for me to cut the line at the door. I couldn't believe a line had formed at the door. It didn't surprise me too much, though, since the king's home was the biggest anywhere near the post. It was a large double gallery house. I loved that style of home, especially when the houses were in the quarter. One day, I had asked Mrs. King why she didn't move closer to the French Quarter, and she had looked at me with a smirk in her eyes and said, "Because, darling Meg, I love my diamonds." She looked down at her wrist, and it sparkled under the lights in her bathroom. I nodded and swept blush over her dark cheeks. I tugged Jo by the arm of her denim jacket, and we pushed through the crowd of people waiting to get inside. I didn't recognize a single face in the sea of them. Mr. Blackley told me to have fun and drink some champagne for him. I was even more surprised when we got into the living room. All of the furniture was placed the same as always, but there were little tables full of appetizers, and tucked in the corner was a full bar. The man behind it was shaking a metal cup in one hand and pouring liquor into a glass with his other, and I felt like I was at a Gatsby party. "This is freaking insane," Joe said into my ear. I agreed with her as we made our way into the parlor to look for someone I knew, anyone but Shia. The first person I spotted was Belle Gardner, standing over by the piano. She was wearing a long, emerald green dress, and I couldn't help but look down at her left hand. Her ring sparkled from 10 feet away, and I could see that the color matched her dress. It was beautiful. My petty dislike for her grew instantly. She smiled at the man in front of her, and I wondered if he was her fiancé. Since he had a fairly large bald spot on the back of his head, I hoped he was. I was petty, but at least I could admit it. "Has it been an hour yet?" Jo pulled her cell phone out of the back pocket of her jeans and checked the screen. "How has it only been 5 minutes?" she asked, and shoved the phone back into her jeans. Jo grabbed a little cucumber sandwich, and we continued to explore. A few minutes later, I saw Reader and the lorry boy standing by the bar. When I told Jo I wanted to talk to them, she shook her head and told me to go for it, but she was staying put. I didn't want to leave my younger sister alone in such a crowded place, but I was bored out of my damn mind. "Meg?" Reader smiled when I approached him. He wrapped his arm around me and I leaned into his expansive chest. He was monstrously big. I had known him since I moved to Fort Cypress. It didn't take long for the student body to hate me, and he was always so nice to me. He used to drive me to school on the mornings that he had patrol, and he was one of the only guys I had ever known that I felt safe around. One sloppy night my senior year, when John had broken up with me, I went to a party and drank my weight in vanilla-flavored vodka. I was a stumbling mess, and Reader showed up with his friends. It was the first time I had seen him out of his uniform, and I hung all over him like a bee to pollen. And when he drove me home and walked me to my back door, I leaned up and tried to kiss him. I had never been turned down by a boy, or man, before that night,
and I haven't been since Reader gently declined my advances. He said I had had too much to drink. He was right. There are so many people here, I said to the two of them. I wondered how Reader, a military police officer, had become such fast friends with the greasy, leather-jacket-wearing boy from Europe. I didn't trust a boy with hair like that. For sure. Happy New Year. Reader raised a glass of clear liquid, and I grabbed a flute of champagne from a passing server's tray. Lori looked at me and took a swig from a can of Coke. Gross. Where's the other girl? Your sister, I assume? You shouldn't assume. The corner of his mouth pulled into a smile. Well, where is your non-sister? I focused on him, looking right into his eyes. They were jet black. It was unnerving. She's not interested in you, I told him. Joe had never had a boyfriend, and no freaking way was this guy going to attempt to be anything close to it. Boys like him didn't want to date. They only wanted one thing, and Joe wasn't ready to give that to anyone. You're a real peach. He ran his long, pale fingers through his blonde hair. I turned away from him, not wanting to feed his ego or irritate him enough to want my sister even more. I knew how boys like him were wired. I searched for Joe by the table I'd left her at, but didn't see her there or anywhere. I knew she was capable of handling herself, more so than me even, but I couldn't shake the uneasy feeling that had planted itself inside my stomach the moment we walked through the door of the party. I told Reader that I would see him later, and didn't so much as look at Lori before I walked away to find Joe. I pushed past big balloons with the numbers of the new year, grabbed another glass of champagne, and went to find my sister.
9. Joe. Every inch of the king's house dripped with disparity and greed. It drove me up the crown-molded wall to walk through a house so full of excess when on the way over here we'd passed by a group of homeless men sharing the scraps of a meal they'd dug out from the trash of the Creole restaurant just off base. Of course I knew that the kings couldn't feed the entire city. Well, maybe they could, but it's not their fault that there are people less fortunate than them. But it was hard to remember that as I walked past a table full of neatly placed lines of bottles of champagne. I always hated the feeling that crept over me when someone was staring at me. I had an uncanny ability to feel their eyes on me the moment they hit me. I waited a few seconds to look up, and when I lifted my eyes, I saw a tall man with brown hair staring at me. He was dressed in his Class A's, making me wonder why he was wearing his military dress uniform to a New Year's Eve engagement party. When he saw me staring back at him, he smiled. I didn't like the way his face changed when he smiled. It wasn't friendly or welcoming. It was expecting and assuming. Since I didn't know what else to do but smile back, I did just that. It was a tiny awkward thing, though he must have taken it as an invitation to approach me, because he set his beer bottle down on the closest table and made his way over. I looked around for Meg, but couldn't find her. So in the brief moment the soldier flicked his eyes away from me, I dipped between two elderly women and turned around the corner. I took another corner, and another, until I passed the kitchen, full of staff, busying themselves to feed the hundreds of people crammed into the mansion. The smell of cornbread and rosemary made my stomach grumble angrily. I should have eaten more than bugles and a cucumber sandwich all day. As a man carrying a tray walked through the archway, I grabbed a snack as he passed. Looking down at the food in my hand, I thanked my lucky stars that it was meatless. It looked like some sort of tomato salsa on bread. I recalled Beth making something like that before, but couldn't remember the name of it. I took a bite and my stomach grumbled again. I kept walking, looking behind me to be sure the man wasn't following me. Not seeing him, but wishing to take no chances, I took another corner and walked up the empty staircase near the back door. It was so quiet back there, and I wondered for a second if I should even be in this part of the house.
Meg had told me a few times that Mrs. King was weird about certain rooms of the house. But I really wanted to get away from the party, if only for a few minutes. I passed two closed doors and reached the end of the hallway. There was something in the corner. It looked like a bench, but I couldn't see clearly because a curtain covered part of it. I walked closer to see if I could hide there for a little bit. I pushed the curtain aside and immediately bumped into a statue sitting atop a marble podium. My hands shot out in front of me to steady it before it crashed to the floor, and once I finally settled it, I spun around to sit on the bench.
"Ow,"
a male voice grumbled, and I jumped back up. Lori was sitting on the bench with a can of Coke in one hand and my arm in his other. I jerked away and pulled back the curtain to escape. "Sorry, I didn't see you here." Out of all the places in this mansion, he had to be sitting in the only quiet spot I could find. Lori put the soda can down on the floor in front of his feet and looked up at me.
"It's okay. I was just hiding back here."
Even sitting down, I was reminded of how tall he was. His mouth was open, and I looked at it briefly, just enough to feel the heat in my cheeks, then looked away.
"I'll go."
I turned away from him. He touched my elbow.
"No, stay."
When he said those two simple words, I felt something like deja vu, which wasn't possible since I had only spoken a few words to him. I thought maybe I was losing my mind, mixing dreams with reality, but I swore I had heard him say those two words to me before.
"I just don't know anyone, and I'm not great at making conversation with strangers, so I would rather hide back here until it's time to leave."
"If you don't know anyone, who tells you when it's time for you to leave?" I asked. He tilted his head and stared at me a moment. His legs were so long that they sprawled out to the rug on the floor. I hoped it wasn't animal fur that he was pressing his black boots into.
"Good question," he smiled at me. "And what about you? Who tells you when it's time to go? Your older sister?"
I shook my head. He stared at me for what felt like minutes, but was actually only about 10 seconds. I counted 5 breaths while I waited for his lips to move. His lips were so full, like mine, and I wondered if he got called mean names in school the way that I did, or if his good looks saved him from the ridicule of his peers, the way they did Meg.
"So, what are you doing at the party if you don't know anyone?" I asked.
He patted the seat next to him, and I sat down, keeping as much distance as possible from him. The bench was so small that it was only about 2 feet of space.
"People watching?"
"And how was that? Did you see any people you liked watching?"
What did that even mean, I silently asked myself. He seemed to understand and smiled at me.
"Your sister is nice to watch. That Meg Spring."
His hair was pulled back into a bun, and I thought he should be a model.
"Oh, my sister, of course," I laughed. "Everyone likes to watch Meg."
"I can imagine that to be true."
He leaned against the back of the cushioned bench, and I stared past him down the long hallway. This house seemed even bigger from the inside than the outside. Old family portraits were on the wall, hung in perfectly symmetrical lines.
"It's a little creepy, right?"
He spoke quietly and quickly, and his lips moved so fast. To have immortalized the entire family and hung them on the walls up here, where guests obviously aren't supposed to be.
"Yes, very."
"So, what about you? Who are you watching out there?"
I shook my head.
"No one."
It was true. I wasn't watching anyone the way he was watching Meg. Lori's face was turned away from me, and he was fixing the cuffs of his dark jeans just above his boots. When I could no longer stand the ensuing silence, I asked, "Is it true that you're from Italy?" He looked at me.
"Yes, my mother is Italian. A painter. I lived there when I was young, Then we moved to the U.S., and last year I lived there for the school year, until I got sent back here.
His tiny accent made sense now. I pondered whether it would be rude to ask him to speak Italian for me, just so I could hear it. What's Italy like? I want to go to Europe so badly. When I work for Vice, I have this entire plan of places to go and stories to cover. I want to see so many more places than here. I've seen the same things over and over my entire life. The same people, the same mentality. I got so lost in my own words and dreams for my future that I had nearly forgotten where I was or who I was talking to.
So, Joe Spring, you've got dreams, do you?
I decided right then that even though I would most likely never have another conversation with him, I needed to hear about Europe.
Yes? Shouldn't we all? Are you speaking generally, or about me specifically?
I knew then that this was what Meg had warned me about, boys who play games. Lori Lawrence was definitely a boy who wanted to play games. Word games were only the beginning. I could play, too. It didn't matter that I had never had a boyfriend. I had three sisters. I was the queen of games. Okay, so maybe Meg was the queen, but I was the princess, for sure. I really need to get going, I told him, instead of moving my piece onto the board. I knew that I could play games, but I didn't want to. I wanted to hear about Europe and the world outside my little one, but he didn't seem willing to share.
What? Why?
He stood up with me, but I hurried away, closing the curtain behind me before he could speak. Checkmate, Lori, I thought as I rushed down the stairs.
10. Meg. Have you seen Joe? I asked Reader when I finally found him again. I had searched the living room, the dining room, and the kitchen and couldn't find my sister. I was beginning to panic, imagining Meredith's reaction when I came home without Josephine. I pulled my phone out of my purse and checked again to be sure she hadn't called or texted me back. Where the hell did she go? I wondered. She better not have left me here. It had been close to an hour, and I was ready to go home. I hadn't seen Mrs. King once since I got to the party. Even though I had spent nearly every day in that house lately, I felt out of place when it was full of strangers. Reader told me that no, he hadn't seen Joe, and I made my way to the backyard of the house. I grabbed my third glass of champagne and pushed through the back door. Crowds of huddled bodies covered the expansive lawn, and so many lights were strung on the trees. It was beautiful, until I heard the shrill voice of Belle Gardner herself.
Meg Spring! What on earth are you doing here?
When I turned to her, she smiled so brightly that for a moment I was convinced that we were friends. But a tiny, barely noticeable falter in her smile reminded me that we weren't. As much as I didn't have a reason to not like her, she had even less of a reason to be staring at me like I was intruding on the occasion somehow. At least 200 people were crammed into the estate, and I could guarantee that most of them didn't have a clue who she was. I was invited. I managed to smile for her. No way in hell was I going to let her know she had crawled under my skin so long ago and stayed there. Her blue eyes sparkled under the canopy lights. Her dress was barely attached to her slim body. Only one string on her left shoulder kept the green satin on her body. The entire back of the dress was cut out, showing her creamy skin underneath. She wasn't even wearing a bra. Bitch.
Oh, were you? She paused to look me up and down. That's great.
I looked at the woman next to her and assumed it was her mother. She had the same dark hair and blue eyes as Belle.
Congrats on your engagement, I told her.
She shot me a pitying look.
It must be hard for you.
I looked around at those surrounding us and realized everyone had fallen quiet. They were watching us like we were the series finale of Gossip Girl.
Belle looked down at her ring, and I fumbled for words. Why would it be hard on me? John was coming back next week from West Point. I couldn't imagine that her fiancé would have better stats than that. I decided to behave like a mature adult and smile instead of spit in her face. The thing I hated most in life was to look foolish in front of people, and there was Belle Gardner trying to make me look pathetic and less than her in her stupid green dress and big emerald engagement ring. I'm happy for you, really, Belle. I turned to walk away and saw Shia approaching. Oh, no, 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 I thought to myself. My fists balled at my sides, and I didn't want to be stuck between those two. Not that night, not ever.
Shia, honey!
Belle waved her hand in the air, and I stopped moving my feet so my brain could try to think of something witty to say if either of them sassed me. Where was her fiancé anyway? If he loved her enough to buy her such a beautiful ring, why wasn't he standing at her side at their extravagant party? I tried to dodge Shia's eyes as he neared us, but I couldn't. I hated the way he always pulled me back to him, even when I hadn't seen him in so long. He was wearing something I never imagined I'd see him in. His black dress pants and black button-up shirt perfectly matched the black blazer he wore. Before that night, I had only seen him in jeans and t-shirts. I tried to look away from his green eyes, but couldn't find it in me.
Look who came to congratulate us!
Belle Gardner's words went right over my head until she reached for his hand and pulled him to her side. He kissed her hair. My legs went numb. I couldn't begin to form a coherent thought as I watched her take his hand between her two. Her ring shone, blinding me. What the hell kind of joke was this? Belle Gardner and Shia King? How? Why? He regarded me coolly. Thanks for coming, Margaret. Margaret? Since when was I Margaret to him? A dark memory interjected that I had probably become Margaret when I left him waiting for me at the airport. That's when I became a full name acquaintance.
It's nothing, I said.
The words were like glass shards in my throat. I couldn't believe that I was living in a world where Belle Gardner and Shia King were the happy, engaged couple that this party was for. I didn't even know the two of them were still in touch. All the hours I spent with Mrs. King in this house, at the store, at her country club, and she never once mentioned anything about Shia and Belle, or Belle and Shia, or this party. Not once. Really, she barely mentioned Shia at all. She mostly talked about her two daughters, who she was so proud to talk about. Both of them had graduated law school, following in the footsteps of Mr. King, the most prominent, most wealthy lawyer in the entire state of Louisiana.
Isn't this party great?
Belle asked. I knew she was talking to me. I was afraid that I wouldn't have the strength to look up at her and meet her eyes, so I remembered what Meredith always told us. Never, ever. Let anyone take your strength, girls. Don't let anyone make you feel less than whole, and if they try, show them who you are. She had told the four of us girls that so many times that by the time I was 10, I had it memorized. I think she said she read it in a book when she was pregnant with me. I lifted my eyes to Belle Gardner and Shia. My smile stretched my cheeks, and I hoped my lipstick was still in place. It's great, really. Thank you for inviting me. I lost Jo somewhere. I'm going to go find her, but you two have a good night. I didn't give them enough time to so much as blink before I turned away, trying to confidently sway my hips as I disappeared into the crowd. My eyes were stinging when I found Jo leaning against the wall and drinking a glass of champagne. You shouldn't be drinking. Meredith will kill me, I said. Jo rolled her big brown eyes at me. It's fine. I won't tell her. Are you ready to go?
Her cheeks were red, and I wanted to tell her about Shia and Belle, but I needed a minute, or 30. Have you ever drank before? I grabbed another glass of champagne from the table next to us, downed it, and reached for another. Yes, once. Beth and I got into Dad's liquor stash when we were at Fort Hood. She smiled. We were so sick the next day. A vague memory of Beth holding Joe's long hair over the toilet popped into my mind. I can't believe Beth, out of all people. I laughed a wry sound. Did you ever find out who Belle Gardner's fiancé is? I haven't even heard anyone talking about it. I think everyone just came for the free booze and finger sandwiches. No one likes Belle Gardner. The champagne bubbled and burned in my mouth. I don't know, I lied. But you're right about no one liking Belle Gardner. So many times I had wanted to share more with Joe, to let her grow up faster than my parents wanted to let her. Meredith was good at teaching us to be strong, to be capable, but she lacked in teaching us anything about the reality of being a teenager. She told me once that she had to grow up too fast and didn't want that for us. I understood that to a point, but Joe had probably never even kissed a boy, I thought with wonder. By her age, I had slept with 3. I didn't apologize for it then, and I definitely wouldn't now. I have to pee. Then can we go? I sucked down the last of the liquid. I'd lost count of how many I'd had. My chest had stopped aching, but I couldn't help but think about Shia and Belle. It made no sense to me. Their personalities couldn't be more different. With his extensive travel, how did they maintain a relationship at all, let alone keep it strong enough to be engaged? How long had they been together? I didn't have a clue. I had kept tabs on his life, or thought I had, but clearly I was slacking in the cyber-stalking department. That, or he didn't care enough about her to even so much as mention her online.
11. I easily found my way to the upstairs bathroom, the one that was connected to Anisha's room. She was the oldest daughter of Mrs. King. I wondered if Anisha was here, too. I hadn't seen her, but it would be even stranger if Shia's sister hadn't bothered to come to town for his engagement party. I stood in front of the mirror for a few minutes before I struggled with my Spanx and relieved myself. On my way out, I thought I heard male voices talking low, but in a fury. I paused by a heavy painting hanging on the wall. I knew the painting well. It was of the entire King family. I didn't have to look up at it to know that Mrs. King was wearing a vivid red dress and that a young Shia sat at his mom's feet, a teddy bear in his small arms. His cheeks were chubby from childhood, and his hair was long on top. Clusters of curls sat on his head. I saw the painting every day that I walked through the empty halls upstairs. Now, as I tried to listen to the conversation through the open door of the room closest to me, I looked around to make sure no one was coming. I hid behind the corner wall. The halls were empty, only faint voices and the echo of music downstairs could be heard. I was surprised that it wasn't louder up here, given the number of people in the house. My stomach turned. The King estate always felt so empty. I could always hear my own footsteps clomping on the original hardwood floors, which Mrs. King loved to tell me were from the 1860s, to the high ceilings which complemented the original crown moldings that clung to the creme walls. Mrs. King was so proud of her home. She talked about the detail on the stained glass windows in the attic with far more pride than on those rare moments when she spoke of her only son and his adventures around the world. I began to feel bored and wanted to go back and find Joe, even though she was grinding on my nerves with that Lori boy. Right as I took my first step away, I heard a voice I recognized. You don't know that. Shia was speaking loud and deep. I slowly slid my feet across the floor, quietly moving closer to the voices. I don't know that? A booming voice howled toward the empty hall. Something fell and broke against the floor. It sounded like glass smashing.
You know nothing, boy. You think just because you went on some child's mission and fed a village of people that you know about the world? Well,
the voice cut off, and I heard Mrs. King say something unintelligible next. I had never met Mr. King in all my time at the King House. I had only heard his voice once, when he had called the house phone to speak to his wife. His voice was the deepest I had ever heard.
Are you happy now? You made it clear that you don't want me to be a part of this family,
Shia yelled. I wondered if Belle Gardner was in the room. I couldn't help my constant craving for drama. It usually wasn't a coincidence when I found it, but that night I was actually minding my own business, just using the bathroom, trying to get away from the drama of Belle. So it had to have been fate that brought me to hear the argument they were having. It was strange, though, because unlike in most cases, as I stood in the hallway listening to Mr. King yell at his son, I didn't feel the adrenaline rush from the drama of it. I felt the hairs on my arm tingling and my back straightening.
You never deserved to be a part of this family,
Mr. King shouted.
You're my only son, the only one who can carry my family name. And look at you.
I thought I heard the sob of a woman. Belle Gardner, maybe? I thought to myself, inching closer. I drew a deep breath and took one last step toward the door. I had never been in that room before, but I knew it was Mr. King's office. I had passed it once when the door was open, but the only thing I remembered about it was the large desk in the center of the room. Now, when I peered around the doorframe, I saw three people. Shia stood closest to the door, his back turned to me. Across from him was Mr. King, a man almost the height of Reader. His skin was a deeper brown than Shia's, and his eyes were dark, but they looked so much alike that it surprised me. Mr. King stepped toward his son, who turned in profile to meet him. Shia's shirt was untucked now, hanging low below his hips. His face was pulled into a tight grimace, eyes closed and mouth twisted at the corners.
I thought by now you would be done wasting your time on these childish games,
Mr. King said, his voice going right back to a shout. Shia spun around and looked at his mom.
Childish games?
He pinched the bridge of his nose and walked in a jagged line across the carpet.
I'm doing what I'm passionate about. Do you have any idea how many people I've helped, fed, taught to read, and here you are still telling me that I'm a child?
The chime of a cell phone seemed to shriek throughout the room. It rang and rang until Mr. King finally snapped,
I have to take this.
The clattering of his shoes on the floor echoed back to me, almost through me, in the hallway.
Of course you do, Shia said,
but his father didn't respond. My chest tightened, and I thought about the first time I met Shia King. We had just been stationed in southern Louisiana from the middle of Texas, and I was walking alone around the French Quarter. I remember leaving my sisters and Aunt Hannah at a frozen yogurt shop to explore for a few minutes alone. I had never been to the French Quarter before, and it was the one thing I was looking forward to when we got the news about our PCS, permanent change of station, to Louisiana. I wanted to move from Texas after what happened during my freshman year. It felt like a godsend when my dad sat us down, nervous and ready for the worst reactions from us, and told us girls that we were moving that summer. I cheered, ready to get away from the torturous assholes at my high school. Joe threw a fit, Beth was smiling, and Amy didn't care at all. That summer was the summer I reinvented myself. I dyed my hair dark, dark brown, and I cut my bangs. I learned how to do my makeup, and I felt like I could start over. That particular day, the sun was beating down on my skin as I walked around the cobblestone streets. My shoulders were sunburned within 20 minutes. I was walking aimlessly, just wanting to explore the streets. The sweet smell of sugar led me down Decatur to a Creole praline shop. The building was beautiful. The outside looked so charming, so New Orleans. Blue metal that resembled lace ribbon draped over the windows. It was impossible to think anyone could pass this place without going in. My mouth was watering and my body was overheated, and I wasn't the only soul who came out that day. I was about the 20th person in line in the big room. The air conditioning was on high, blowing loudly from the ceiling. Little carts were full of souvenirs, with a logo of the store on everything from t-shirts to mugs. I grabbed a mug because I couldn't resist.
"You have to try the chocolate,"
a voice behind me said. I turned around to see Shia standing there, his smile youthful and his eyes frosted green.
"I've never been here."
He smiled at me and glanced at my mug.
"I figured."
I turned back around. A few moments later, his fingers tapped my shoulder.
"You didn't get the chocolate,"
he said as I took my first bite of the crunchy praline treat. I almost got the chocolate, but chose not to just to spite him. Our relationship kept with that pattern, him giving me advice and me doing the opposite just to prove a point. It's why we would never work. We tried a few times, but neither of us had the patience to put up with the other.
"Meg, what are you doing up here?"
Mrs. King's voice pulled me from my walk down memory lane. Her square chin was raised, and I stood up straighter, trying to come up with something to say. And yet her tone smoothed over her words, as if her husband and her son hadn't just been screaming at each other like the family tree was being chopped down.
I paused. "I'm looking for my sister."
I heard shuffling inside the big room and wanted to get moving before Shia came out and saw me.
"Your sister? The little blonde one or the one with the long hair?"
I wanted to tell Mrs. King that I actually had three sisters, but I felt it wouldn't do any good. She didn't seem to remember their names, even though I talked about them all the time. Well, I wouldn't say all the time, since I didn't actually speak much around Mrs. King, but when I did, I talked a lot about my younger sisters.
"That's the one, yes. I'm sorry to disturb you."
I looked around me, trying to avoid her heavy gaze. She was so damned intimidating. I looked at her outfit and wondered if I would ever dress like her when I was older. Her maroon blazer matched her pencil skirt perfectly, not even a fraction of a shade off. Around her neck was a thick rope of pearls, and her lips were dark fuchsia. She was a beautiful woman in her late 40s. I couldn't imagine what she looked like when she woke up. Even when I came in the early afternoon to do her makeup, she already had her hair done and she was usually dressed to the nines, perfectly paired jewelry and all. I wanted to be like her when I grew up. I don't think she wanted me to notice the way she glanced back to the open door as we began to walk down the hallway.
"It's fine, dear. Let's go downstairs," she said neutrally.
Mrs. King was at least 5 inches taller than me in her stilettos. The way she could walk in them made my already aching feet feel even more pathetic. I had a long way to go. She made me feel both the oldest and the youngest I could ever be. I looked up at my boss, and she turned to face me as we passed the upstairs bathroom. The door was closed, and a thin line of light was cast on the floor. It was quiet, so when she spoke to me, her voice was as soft as a sprinkle of confectioner's sugar.
"Have you enjoyed the party?
I'm sure you heard some things you shouldn't have. We can just forget about that private family moment, can't we?"
I nodded.
"Yes, please." I hope she didn't call me out for calling out sick for work and being here, dressed up and obviously not sick.
"Of course, and yes, the party is stunning. I'm happy for your son and for all of you."
Her smile slid up her dusted cheeks. Whoever did her makeup tonight did almost as good a job as I do.
"I wouldn't be too happy," she said, so low that I almost thought I had imagined it.
Neither of us talked as we crossed the upstairs of the house. The music and voices from the party downstairs carried up to where we stood. It was weird how quiet it was upstairs. In my parents' house, I can hear every single noise from wall to wall. I will have a house like this by the time I'm 30. Do you want to have a glass with me before?